Thanks for listening to episode 0 of Fits and Starts. This episode is cobbled together from a few long conversations that Daniel and I had long before we knew what the show was actually going to be about. So the audio quality and the flow of the conversation are all over the place. It's pretty rough, but it's the conversation that started us down the road that we're on now, so we thought we'd put it out there. Thanks for checking it out, and enjoy.
Hello?
Hello?
What's up, brother?
Let's talk about Fits and Starts.
Fits and Starts is about people our age talking about work.
Fits and Starts is highly specific, but highly specific in the things I'm interested in.
The things that I like.
I think that I didn't fall asleep.
Conversations that you guys have are like real life conversations. If you were like sitting in my living room, so keep up that good work.
Like podcasting honey.
But ding! There's really only one thing I don't like.
Mic problems.
Not often you get to hear two white dudes give their opinions on stuff. Annoying bros, but not annoying.
Like, no, you know what Fits and Starts is like?
Fits and Starts. Fits and Starts.
Fits and Starts is a morale booster. That's absolutely what it is.
This week on Fits and Starts, we'll talk about the Protestant work ethic, the value of a balanced life, and then we get derailed by a DIY shelf that nearly tore us asunder. As always, please reach out to us with any feedback or questions you might have. Our Twitter handles are in the show notes. So the thing that I was writing down was I was thinking about what are all the different things that this show or podcast or conversation or whatever we'd like to call it, what it could look like and what it might be or what I could imagine it to be. So my thought was, you know, we have a lot of conversations. We have a few years of background behind us, and we have some ideas that we want to bounce off of each other. We also like jumping into PlayStation and playing some games. So my thought was combine those two things and record the conversation, edit it down into something that's, you know, palatable, and then sort of keep track of where we are over the course of time with our ideas, with our work, with where we stand on these things. And long term, I wondered if, as we've talked about, if you and I could actually start a project together, some kind of business, some kind of something, and work together and try to build something together. So all of that kind of came together to me thinking that I would start writing down ideas of things that I've been wanting to talk about, things that I've been processing through, things that I've wanted to bounce off of you that could make for good fodder for conversation in that kind of context.
So I think the topic at the center of the show is much closer to like a generational shift where you go from being the generation that is about to enter the workforce to being the generation that's like making up the bulk of like the sort of lower level positions of the workforce. You know what I'm saying? I mean, there's a few people in our generation who own big businesses and are very successful, but like a lot of us are like, we're now sort of like, we've entered into the workforce. We all have bosses. We all want to build things. We all, you know, are starting to want to have our own stuff. This generation in particular with the internet, like, has seen the viability of like doing your own thing and doing it sort of outside of the normal ways of going about it. And so there's a lot more people who want to start their own things. There's a lot more creative stuff going on. And then there's like, so then there's me and you who are like in two like super normal jobs, you know, like I'm a programmer,
mm-hmm.
You work for a venture capital fund. Like these are two very like 21st century sort of trades, you know, like if you think about like the types of businesses that are bigger this century than they were last century, it's like computer consultancies and venture capital. And we're both doing, you know, like we're both starting to experience like the life of like a professional, right? And we're, you know, we're both, you know, 3 to 5 years into our careers now. It's not all like a shiny carnival wonderland anymore of like, oh my God, I can't believe I have a career. But it's also not that scary anymore, right? Like we kind of understand what it is that we're called on to do here. But like we're still sort of discovering things and exploring things and stuff like that. To me, that's what this show is about, is like the arc, right? The arc of like entering into just past the beginning of your career. Like entering the beginning of the middle of your career. And like everything that goes around that is like mindfulness and work and you know, wanting to start your own business at some point and interests and the internet and baseball, you know, all of those things I think can be a part of that. But like, to me, being an existentialist, as always, like, I think the topic is more existential, which is like, what is it to be people in these places?
I think that's a good guiding principle, is just to keep on coming back to the word exploration. I think the better we are about never pretending to be qualified on much of anything, the better the show will be.
Yeah, but I do think you have like insight that most people don't have in your field, right? And I think at the same point, like, I have a lot of insight that a lot of people don't have in my field, right? And like, that's why when I was wondering about how valuation is calculated for a software as a service company with monthly billing, I like, I sent you an email and I was like, hey, if I was a software as a service company that like makes this much money and spends this much money, what's the valuation of that company? And you like literally sent me a PDF on how to evaluate that company, right?
I'll send you PDFs till you're blue in the face.
That I believe all day. And like at the same time, like when you've got, you know, tech questions, you'll ask me or Walter or someone and we'll be like, hey, here's the thing, you know?
Yeah.
But I do agree that like taking the tack of exploration over expertise is better.
I gotta show you some of my spreadsheets sometime. You'll really get a kick out of them.
Oy vey. Oy vey.
So one of the things that I might wind up getting into, or that I'm almost certainly going to get into in my next few years of my career, is some kind of role in marketing.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm realizing that actually marketing is a pretty robust, interesting thing that can mean a lot of different things. So I'm taking a broader interest in the field of marketing. I also, though, I'm under the impression that like a lot of it is really like scum of the earth stuff. And so I'm kind of wrestling with it right now. I don't necessarily see it as like deceptive or anything like that. It's just, I think the tracking, the remarketing, the influencer stuff, the sponsored content, all of that, in my mind, makes the internet a worse place. And it does not make the internet a better place. And that's correct. My problem with it. And I'm not going to like get on like my, you know, holy high horse. What's the phrase I'm looking for there?
High horse.
And say like, you know, all of this stuff is evil, blah, blah, blah. Like everyone should stop doing it. It's not something that I want to do because I look at it and I'm like, on a daily basis, these things make my internet experience worse and I don't want to participate. Aside from just the ads, I am so sick of just being suspicious of everything, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Especially with the like, you know, like with what like Business Insider has done,
where, what are they doing?
Well, Business Insider is basically like, cause they're basically doing their BuzzFeed, but for business articles, you know?
Right.
And so like when you search for something, you can find content on there all under the Business Insider heading, because they do make real content on their own. But there's also like
sponsored content.
There's a ton of sponsored content, and like, you know, top 10 reasons, Best Western is better than Red Roof Inn. You're like, wait a minute, why is this? Oh, right. Everything looks real.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to like go onto the website to try to figure out like, wait a minute, this only has like 10 shares on it. And it looks very suspect.
Right.
And then you realize, oh, because it's like not an actual thing. It's made to look like journalism, but it's definitely not journalism. I hate that. I really, really hate it.
It's the worst.
Well, I feel like I was being a little whiny just then.
Just like bemoaning the state of things?
Yeah, just saying like, oh, I'm so mad that the internet is this way. I wish it weren't. But like, it's that way because that's effective and that's just the way it is. And like, I'm not going to change that. And why spend any time being upset about it? Like, it is what it is. I'm not going to change it. And that's that.
You know, dude, I think that, okay, hang on. This takes me back to, like, a deep resentment that I have. So, I have a huge resentment against the Protestant work ethic and all of its subsidiaries. Okay? Does this make sense?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I think it's going to.
I believe that the idea of why spend time worrying about it or all of the derivatives thereof, right? Mm-hmm. It's just not worth worrying about, or it's not worth being upset about, or why are you spending so much energy or time being upset about this thing? I think that concept ties really closely to the Protestant work ethic for me.
Interesting, because I don't think about those things being related at all.
My issue with the Protestant work ethic is like the whole like idle hands are the devil's work type of thing, where like,
yeah,
you know, it's by work and exhaustion that you really, you know, come to deserve anything, you know?
Well, I don't think
and
that's...
like, well, okay, sure, but I think like there's a big like tie-in for me with like the idea that like, hey, no wonder, you know, no wonder you're not happy, you're probably not working hard enough, you know? That's observed in the whole like Protestant work ethic concept. And to me, the idea of like it's not worth worrying about, or like all of those sorts of phrases, strike me the same as like, well, yeah, like clearly, like that doesn't tie in with like the mission, right? Like the mission, or like what it is that we're trying to get accomplished here, right, doesn't involve you worrying about that thing, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And it feels almost the same way, where like what we're trying to get accomplished here doesn't involve you being a songwriter or you, you know, making artisanal furniture, right? Because
furniture. Even that's a misunderstanding though, because I think those things can, at least by me and a lot of the other Protestants that I know, can be seen as productive. That's like doing something, right? But whining is like very clearly non-productive.
Sure. But it didn't seem like your issue was like with the whining in and of itself. It seemed like you're saying that because you took umbrage...
I'm not getting anything out of it.
It seems like your issue was like, because I take umbrage and my taking umbrage doesn't change anything, I am being whiny, right?
But
I think like whiny is like the negative connotation of being like, I'm being ineffectively negative here.
Yeah, ineffectively negative is a good way of putting it. I think like, yeah. And I think it's a bad use of time and energy.
Yeah, that's what I mean by Protestant work ethic and how it ties in. Like,
yeah,
the Protestant work ethic to me has always been about, like, the effective use of time and energy.
Yeah,
and, like,
which is something that I spend a lot of my time worrying about.
Right, but, like, as a moral issue.
Yeah, no, but as I spend time worrying about it as a moral issue.
Oh, please stop. That's like, the thing that, like, drives me bonkers is, like, none of this is a moral issue. Like,
oh, it is though, because it's like, but as speaking as a Protestant, I can't say this for everyone. It's like it's an issue of stewardship.
Oh my God!
It's like you have the time you have, and like that time is like a precious commodity in a lot of ways.
Uh huh.
And so, like, it should be going towards good things and not towards bad things.
But then, like, correct me if I'm wrong, right? To the extent that you are able to determine, would you argue that your time should always be going to the best possible thing at any time?
Well, see, now that's a tricky thing, because then you start getting into kind of like utilitarianism.
Where you are anyway. You just aren't willing to admit it.
No, I'm very willing to admit it. It's a huge shortcoming of mine.
I don't see a moral issue with, on a given Sunday, sleeping until 1 in the afternoon and then going out and getting coffee and then coming home and doing nothing and then going to sleep. You know, like,
yeah, but that's a Sabbath.
Oh, all right. On a given Saturday, then, right? Yeah. And like, I think that's like an important point, is that like, I, for me, like work ethic, like work life balance is so important. And the idea that like, that service, whether it be to like God or other people or your own personal direction in life or whatever it is, that like service trumps sort of like self-care, I guess, is what I would call that, right?
That's interesting. I think you may be onto something with that. Somewhere deep down inside of me, I think that like self-care is like a necessary evil to keep yourself afloat, even though I know that that's not true.
Right. Whereas I think that a work ethic and a drive towards, you know, towards achieving things even when you don't want to, is sort of a necessary evil in the grand scheme of like finding fulfillment and happiness in life. So I come at it from the other option, the other side.
I think that's interesting. Do you think that that perspective that you have is something that you were born with, or is this something that you've learned or come to over time?
I am constantly at war with the Protestant work ethic.
Okay.
Arousing itself in my mind.
I like your little mascot. You got a mysterious, looks like maybe a lynx of some kind.
I believe that's just a like an Egyptian cat of some sort.
It's handsome.
Man, I really hope my landlord never listens to this podcast.
You know, hey, what would it look like for us to make, you know, bedazzled iPhone cases?
Somebody I know from the restaurant industry is doing a secret pop-up, and the tickets are very expensive, and I had to reserve them a long time in advance.
Is it so it's like a purge?
Well, no.
But I mean, with less killing. Am I crazy for thinking that there's a little bit of tomfoolery going on there?
A guy who didn't graduate with half a philosophy degree explains to a guy who did graduate with an economics degree the value of a computer science degree. Yeah, so now I have sort of gotten to the point where, like, I have burned out a few times in my career, short as though it has been, you know? Yeah. And, like, having burned out a few times, like, I'm starting to understand that, like, work, like, grinding and the grind and the being a badass and crushing it and killing it and just getting it done and being so good,
yeah,
is not its own reward. You actually need to do that for a reason. Whereas being like balanced and like achieving things is its own reward.
Yeah.
So like, you know, like achieving a goal is very rewarding, but if you didn't sleep for 6 months to do it, the reward is kind of gone.
Right. Or alternatively, if you ignored your family to do it.
Sure. Exactly. Yeah. Or, you know, if you didn't, you know, if you missed the summer, you know, or whatever it is.
One thing that I would be curious to do is to learn more about, for you personally, when you talk about that, like you need to be doing it, you know, because reasons, what your reasons are, you've talked, you know, about your new job, wanting to just get significantly better at programming and become a really, really proficient programmer. And I'm curious what the drive is inside of you. Is it to build something? And if it is to build something, like what's behind that?
I'm sure the answer will change like every week. Yeah. But at a certain level, some of the like the standing things that I know about that are sort of consistent are like, I would like to one day own a business. The main reasons I would like to own a business are A, because I think it's interesting. B, because there exists a certain freedom in owning a business. And then the other thing is that, like, and I think this is the thing that drives you to be interested in owning a business, is the idea that, like, you could tweak a variable and, like, actually have that change your paycheck. And, like, I think that's the thing that, like, people get entrepreneurs get addicted to, is, like, the idea that, like, when I started, I made $0 a year. And yeah. Then a year in, I made, you know, $60,000 a year. And then the goal is that I'm going to tweak enough variables that 2 years in, I'll make $120,000 a year. And right. Then I'm going to tweak enough variables from there that 3 years in, I make $200,000 a year, right? That is extremely appealing to me. Like, that is totally the idea I love. Yeah, and I think that's it, right? It's like, mostly it's curiosity, you know? Yeah. And it's like curiosity about, like, optimizing my own quality of life. I guess, like, how much of the stuff that, like, feels like could I not do and still have, like, a life? Because, like, obviously, like, everyone would be like, yeah, I just want to, like, not work and be rich, you know? Right. Which is
that,
like,
doesn't appeal to me at all. That sounds terrible.
Oh, I would love to not have to work and be rich. I would still work, but I could choose what I wanted to work on.
Well, yeah, okay, that sounds
good. You wouldn't be restricted to working on things that were profitable.
Right, yeah, okay, that sounds good. Not working sounds like a certain kind of hell to me.
Yeah, I could make it a good couple months, for sure. I could totally veg out for a couple months.
Well, but see, even then, though, like, the thing that I would do with my free time, like, the first things that I would probably do would be, like, get really much more. I would spend probably a significant amount of time working on music, and that's mm-hmm. just a different kind of work, you know?
Sure.
Like, I wouldn't, I couldn't go, like, be on the beach for more than, like, a week, you know?
Huh. Maybe once you start meditating a little bit more.
Yeah.
You'll find a place in your heart that could not work for longer.
It's not like I can't relax or something like that. Like, I know that there are people like that, or like, I'm a workaholic, I gotta work all the time, can't relax. Like, it's not like that at all. It's like, I love relaxing. It's just like, the relaxing is like, it serves a purpose, and it's to, like, recharge me.
Oh, that's so interesting. See, I see it the exact opposite way. Yeah, so I think the working serves a very specific purpose, which is that I can't really relax unless I work out some of the stuff.
Oh, man.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
If I don't work, like, I don't solve any problems, and I don't get to be creative, and I don't get, you know, all these things.
Yeah.
And I don't interact with people, and I don't get to help other people solve problems. So that's a big deal for me, because, like, I can't relax unless I get all that energy out, you know?
Huh. So it's like going to the gym.
I wouldn't know.
Yeah. Oh, that might be a separate issue.
That's the thing, dude. I don't think, like, chilling and getting shit done are mutually exclusive. I think you can do both.
They're not. I'm getting better at both of them. I don't think I'm great at either of them right now.
Well, that's the whole point about chilling, though, is, like, can you really be great at it? Like,
I'm competitively chilling. No, yeah. I feel like on this, you're making me out a little bit to be, like, type A psychopath over here. I don't feel like I'm that guy.
I don't think you're a psychopath.
Okay.
I do think you're a little bit type A, though.
Yeah. I like my ducks in a row.
That's for damn sure. You know, I'm not making you out to be anything.
all don't I'm doing, me, Daniel.
I am pigeonholing you a little bit, but not because I'm making you out to be anything. Just because
I have love to give.
Sure you do. Sure you do.
Is there a monocle you could get?
And see, the real question you're asking is this an office earned by merit or by lineage?
Are there spurs anywhere?
You know what? Honestly, John, I think the way you use interesting is the way that sort of contemporary liberals use problematic.
Great. Well, that makes me feel really good about it.
I believe that this car successfully instills fear in the hearts of my enemies. Yeah, I had to do business with Russia. I had to talk to Putin. But I didn't go out there saying, this guy's my role model.
Does it sound like a pig?
Oh, that Indonesian internet, bro.
Yeah, isn't that something?
I remember, yeah, we built a shelf one time.
Oh, the dish drying shelf?
That's correct. We got to fight about that shelf.
It was a good shelf, though.
It was a good fight.
Yeah, well, I don't really remember the fight, actually. I do remember, though, having a great shelf afterwards, because what we did was, I don't know if how well you recall, but for the actual rack parts of it.
I recall exactly that we did exactly what you wanted to do.
It worked really well.
Yeah, maybe for you.
We took the vent part of the fan and cut it in half and used that as the racking for the shelf so that water could drip through and we could put it right over the sink and you could dry your dishes on there.
Mm-hmm.
What was your issue with the shelf? You thought it could have been better?
I don't recall. I think a lot of my issue was just your tone. Oh man, I really have no idea what I wanted to do with that shelf, but I do remember like slamming a door, and that was like really the first time you and I had disagreed in any like substantive way, and you seemed to get kind of worried about it, and
yeah.
You were like, hey man, and you sort of mansplained to me how like you weren't trying to start nothing. You just thought that there was a right and a wrong way to do this shelf.
It's amazing how it's really depressing to me that I don't remember that part of it. All I remember is having a great shelf.
Yeah. Well, you know.
The funny thing is that not only do I not remember being a control freak, and not only do I just remember having a really awesome shelf and being very, very proud of it because it was presumably made exactly to my specifications.
Correct.
The worst thing of all, which I hesitate to tell you now and did not tell you at the time, I don't even remember you participating.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, that's the thing. I don't believe I participated in the actual creation of the shelf.
The version of it in my memory is just like me sitting alone in complete solitude on the hall.
Dear diary, today I made a shelf. It was great.
Making a shelf and then just sort of like Ron Swanson, like wiping my hands on the way out and being like, job well done. That is my entire memory of working on this shelf.
That is
making me do some serious like questioning of myself now.
Yeah, like who am I? What do I remember?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's pretty bad.
I don't think it's that bad, dude.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Well, here's like for example, let's like come back to the point where like the human memory is extremely unreliable.
Yeah.
With the following story. Now, I want to be clear. This is not a story about how the human memory is unreliable. This is a story about how people can disagree about things that definitely happened.
Yeah.
So, when I was a young boy, say around the age of 3 or 4, my mother served me an entire raw onion for dinner. She claims that this did not happen, but this did happen.
What was it, punishment?
I cannot recall, but it felt like it at the time.
That seems really outrageous.
Yeah, yeah, it seems outrageous, except for the fact that it's like so vivid in my memory, like where we were sitting and like what the deal was, like in general and
now
in specific.
She says that it didn't happen.
Not only does she say it didn't happen, my father, who also was served a raw onion for dinner.
Oh, so you were both being punished?
unclear. My father, who also was served a raw onion for dinner, refuses to weigh in on whether or not this happened.
Oh, so he's not even denying it. He's just saying this is not my I don't have a dog in this fight.
It's a non-denial denial is what it is. He can neither this is the problem. My father used to work for the No Such Agency.
Yeah, right.
And so
he can neither confirm nor deny.
He's very trained in not confirming nor denying. and he is using all of his training to great effect with regards to this specific onion.
Okay. So now, the point of this, the takeaway I'm supposed to have here is that rational people can have very different understandings of something that definitely happened.
The point is that you and I, both rational people, you recall building a shelf in a grandiose and almost laudable way, whereas I recall that you were a massive...
yeah.
And these two things can simultaneously be true.